Folks, I am really excited to talk about our newest sponsor for the coaching staff, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, also All-American Used Cars and Trucks. Two really, really good businesses. I'm going to start with Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. You know, it's hard to find a good mechanic. It's hard to find somebody that you trust. And, you know, long before this situation came about, we had been taking our cars to Ruiz for a year and a half, and they've done great work. They're honest, they're upfront, they can do everything. They, you know, take care of your motor, take care of your brakes, tires, oil, so simple stuff like oil changes, brake pads, mufflers, whatever you may need, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust are going to take care of it for you. If you are in the Omaha area and you are looking for a quality, reasonably priced, customer-friendly situation, you're not going to regret giving Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust a chance here. They are located at 4839 North 90th Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68134. You could give Esmeralda a call up there. Her number is 402-317-2572. And they'll get you taken care of. I'm saying this as a customer. We literally do not bring our cars anywhere other than Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust for anything that we do from this point for the last year or two. So again, another business here, All American Used Cars or Trucks. If you're in the market for a used car or truck, go check out Juan Carlos's business there. 144th and I-80, 14706 Schooner Road here in Omaha. Go check it out here. If you're looking to exchange a car, buy, sell, trade, whatever it may be, you're going to get an honest deal from honest people. So go check out Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust and All American Used Cars and Trucks. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and Napkin Podcast, the weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. And I am just putting out the vibe right now. We are getting ready with another episode of the coaching staff with Mr. Tony D. Viss, episode number 102. How you doing on the other line there, Lloyd Christmas?
I'm doing all right. You know, it's a little bit getting close to my bedtime here, but I think I'm going to be able to tough her out. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right as well. Last night, I will confess, I was in bed by 9:45, so I'm a little scroogey right now as well. So we're recording this on Tuesday night. Tony's got some homecoming stuff going on at Kennedy this week, so we usually do this on Thursday to drop it on Friday, but this week it's a Tuesday night, so if anything happens in the world of basketball in the next couple of days, that's the reason why it's not on here. So, Tony, homecoming, is big homecoming week. Are you excited for the crowning of the homecoming royalty?
I am. We've got some basketball guys that are up for king, so wishing them all the best. Hopefully, we'll get some good results on that. But it's been a good week so far. We had swap day, so I dressed like a student today. Some of them dressed like teachers, so that was good. And then tomorrow, I think it's camo day, so that might throw a little bit of a monkey wrench in attendance, but I'll do the best I can.
Yeah, well, just, you know, it'd be hard to find people to make sure that they're there for attendance if they're in camo.
That's true. Yeah. That is true.
Dad joke 101 right there. So episode number 102, Mr. Viss, I've got quite a few. I didn't realize how many good basketball players wore number 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So here's some other folks that have worn number 2, some great athletes. Three baseball players and a footballer, Derek Jeter, great second baseman, Roberto Alomar, always fond of the second baseman because that's where I played. Jimmy Fox, the Hall of Famer, Jimmy Fox for, I believe, the Philadelphia Athletics, wore number 2. And then in American football, we've got Matt Ryan, Matty Ice. The former quarterback.
Yeah, don't bring up the Super Bowl with New England.
Well, I'm okay with that because I'm a Patriots fan. So, you know, it's okay. I'm okay with bringing it up. I feel bad for him, but I was excited for it anyway. So I had a better day that day than Matty Ice did. How about that? So, all right. So I've got 7 basketballers, Tony, with the uniform number 2. Let it rip, my friend.
Wow. Yeah. 7?
7.
The only one I can recall, and I don't think you probably made your list, was Brad Sellers, because he was with the Bulls when Jordan was a rookie.
Brad but Sellers 7? Is not a trophy. Matt Sellers, or Brad Sellers, is not on this list.
Oh, crap. That was my one. Kawhi doesn't wear number 2, does he?
Kawhi is number 2.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm 1 for 7. That's not going to get me the Hall of Fame in baseball.
No.
Shoot.
Let's see.
Is Dame? No, Dame's 1.
Dame's 0.
Like I said, Dame 0.
Only one of these, you got 1 of the 2 active players. Everybody else is retired.
Everybody else is retired. Number 2 active player. Besides,
just played in the finals.
Ooh, all right. So now we've got some stuff to go there. Just played in the finals. Drew Holiday isn't 2, is he?
Nope.
Jalen Brown.
Nope, he's number 7. Kyrie Irving.
Kyrie.
Yeah.
You would think that because they've only got like 2 good players in the Mavericks.
Yeah. And his coach is also on this list. Jason Kidd.
Jason Kidd.
You are number 2.
Okay, we with the Mavs.
Yep.
Oh, wait, no, yeah.
Mavs, I think he wore number 2.
Was he with the Nets?
Yeah, it was the Nets. I think he wore number 2 as well. I could be. No, he was number 5. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Maybe, I don't know why he would. Yeah, because he's more than number 5. I shouldn't have put him on there. That's my fault. So,
Kevin Johnson?
Not Kevin Johnson, but it's a Johnson.
Magic was 32, so that's not going to be him.
One of the greatest college basketball teams never to win a national championship. He won a championship, but then he didn't win a championship when everybody thought they were going to win a championship.
Stacey Augman.
Same team.
Larry Johnson.
There you go.
Last
name was Johnson, and you went Stacey Augman. Jeez. I need a new co-host.
A lot of people don't know it was Augman Johnson.
3 more.
Well, shoot, I 3 more?
Yeah, there's 3. I'm telling you.
You're just making things up now.
I am not. This number 2's actual favorite number was 4, or actually how he said it was faux.
Who's this more?
There you go. Faux. Yeah. The other 2 guys, great scorers. Teams did not do so great. I don't think you're going to get them, so should I just give it to you?
Alex English.
Oh, there's 1!
Take that.
Yeah.
Shoot, great score. George Gervin?
No,
the Iceman?
No, not George Gervin. Who was the other one?
He said the Iceman. I went with his
name. Oh, God, sorry. I didn't hear.
Sometimes sometimes the regular name doesn't work, the nickname will work.
You're just pissed. I wasn't really going to find a new co-host. I didn't mean to offend that.
Doggone Stacey Ogden Johnson. Good score. Nard King. No, he's not 2, is he?
No, you'll never get it. Mitch Richmond.
All right, but we're going to get it. Mitch Richmond?
Mitch Richmond. Yeah, from Kansas State. And
Run TMC.
Yep, Run TMC. So take that.
Oh, Alex English. I know my Denver Nuggets.
Yes. What was that? He was in a basketball movie. What was that? I can't remember what it is, but I know he was in a he starred in a basketball movie. So,
okay.
I'm just telling that's another Alex English thing. I feel like you need to know. So, Episode number 102, Tony, the importance of role players, again, kind of hitting some themes of, you know, coaches getting ready for the upcoming season, thinking about constructing your roster and putting that together. Amazing Grace and Chuck, that was the name of the Alex English movie, just for reference. So, yeah, I mean, you know, Tony, you're kind of the one that threw this one out here. Where was kind of the motivation? Where'd you get it at, buddy?
You know, it was going back to kind of the time when we were talking about the model to construct NBA teams right now.
Yeah.
Seems like if you get a couple superstars and like a handful of really good, solid role players, that seems to be kind of the flavor of the month, if you will, in the NBA right now. And, you know, it goes back to that phrase, you know, little things make a big difference, and then eventually figure out if you want to win, there are no such thing as a little thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same thing with role players, is the fact that, you know, you can have these star players, but with role players, you know, starring your role. And if you have those guys, you understand, and gals as well, the glue and the connectivity that they bring to a team. And I think those are the ones that probably end up being what separates the great teams from the good teams, is you have people who are willing to sacrifice their ego for what truly matters, and that's winning the game.
Yeah. And I think that a great team, in many ways, Tony, it's like putting together a puzzle. And those pieces have to fit together. And you know just as well as I do, whether it's a little kid's puzzle or it's a 1,000-piece puzzle, every piece has to fit a certain way for the puzzle to work. And I think any type of team, whether it's a baseball team, football team, gymnastics team, whatever it may be, and here we're focusing on basketball, those pieces have to fit together. Some pieces are going to have the face of the center of the puzzle. Some of them are just going to be just a kind of random background piece, but every piece has to do its job for the whole puzzle to come together. And that's what you have to be willing to do. And yeah, you wish that you had a bigger role. Sometimes everybody wishes, I don't want to say everybody, a lot of players wish that they had a bigger role at times, but you know, NBA rosters, there's usually two, maybe if you're lucky, three stars, but then there's 14 other guys that have a different role. And one of the things I think is really important when you're talking about roles, and I'll lead off with this here, Tony, is, you know, you have to, you know, everybody has a role. A lot of people don't look at star players, your Durant, your LeBrons, your Currys, whatever. You know, they're not a role player, they're a star. Well, no, their role is to be a star. And for their team to do well on most nights, unless you get into a deal like when Durant was with the Warriors, or, you know, those type of super teams that you have there, those stars' role, they have to be a star almost every single night out for the team to do well. You know, one of the lessons I really learned from that as a head coach was my second year at Fort Calhoun, and we only had one senior on the squad, and her name was Tessa, and great kid. She grew up so much in the 2 years that I coached. I'm really proud of her. She's playing at Nebraska Wesleyan right now. But her senior year, if she wasn't playing well, Tony, we were in a whole lot of trouble most nights. She had that pressure on her that she had to score it very, very well for us to have a chance to win on most nights. She had to probably get 15, 16, 17 points for us to have a chance, especially if we played anybody that was even okay. You know, so I think when you're talking about roles and being stars, a lot of people address that as stars. No, there's a role, and a lot of people think they want that role, but until they're put into that role, they don't realize how difficult that role of being a star can be at times.
Yeah, the stress and pressure of having to score at a high level is tremendous. I mean, you take a look at like Caitlin Clark, she didn't have a very good first game in the playoffs. But there's a lot of stress and pressure every single night, and you're going to get the other team's best defender, and you might get the other team's best defenders, where you have all this attention on you. And so they carry a big load there. And then on top of that, as a person who is counted on to put the ball in the basket at a high level, if you don't compete on the defensive end, they're going to hunt you down and find you and attack you on that end and try to wear you out by making you play defense as well. And so stars have to be well-rounded. It's not always about the scoring. But yeah, there's a lot of stress and pressure that goes along with that. And stars got to score it if your team's got a chance.
Yeah. Before we really, really get into it, Tony, I found a quote from your guy, Greg Burge, about roles. I just happened to be stumbling. I was actually putting together today's napkin and I found one of his quotes. Bad teammates complain about their role. Good teammates accept their role. Great teammates star in their role. And I think when you're putting together roles for your team and the importance of role players, man, that's the way you got to sell it. That if we want to be a great team, yeah. And on great teams, Tony, and you and I have been fortunate enough to be part of multiple great teams. You have players that are overqualified for the role that they're serving on that team, but you got to sell them that this is what we need you to do for us to be really, really good.
Yeah, and sometimes, I mean, that role that you're asking them to do can be one that's not going to get your name in the paper a lot. It's going to be a role that, you know, isn't necessarily going to fill up a stat sheet. It might be you're going to set a lot of screens every time we come down the floor. You are always going to guard the other team's best offensive players, and you're going to follow them all over the place. And you're going to have to run through screens and, you know, handoffs and so on and so forth. And so it may not be a lot of fun, but if we're going to have a chance, that's what you're going to have to do, is maybe bypass what you hope your role is and accept this for us to be, and for us to be able to get to where we want to get to.
Mm-hmm. In 1993, Counting Crows referred to Omaha as somewhere in Middle America. More people know Omaha as the home of Warren Buffett, the Union Pacific Railroad, and the College World Series. Athletically, Nebraska is known for its dominance in college and high school football and volleyball, while basketball has perennially been on the back burner. But for one season, in its largest city, basketball was king of the state. In a time of social and political turmoil in our country, three high school boys basketball teams from Omaha, Nebraska were ranked in the top 25 in the country, featuring some of the best talent that one city has ever produced anywhere in the country. Amongst these three teams were nine Division I basketball players, and all 15 starters from these three teams played collegiate athletics at various levels for at least two seasons. Kings of their court, three teams, one city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history begins with the chaotic ending of the 2020 state tournament as the whole world was shutting down due to the COVID-19 virus. Over the span of the next year, these players, coaches, and parents navigated their basketball futures while also, like the rest of the United States and the world, worked through COVID quarantines, the George Floyd murders and riots, the political turmoil of the 2020 presidential campaign, and much more. One year later, the destinies of these three teams would intertwine themselves for the final time at the 2021 Nebraska State Basketball Tournament, where the crescendo to this story occurred 365 days after it began, with some of the best high school basketball any state has ever seen. Kings of their court, three teams, one city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history is the story of highly driven individuals searching to achieve lifelong dreams and aspirations, both on and off the basketball floor, during a season that almost didn't happen. Kings of Their Court will be published on October the 1st, Tuesday, October the 1st. Kindle copies are $9.99. Paperback copies are $19.99. Copies are eligible to be pre-ordered today, so be sure to get on Amazon.com and pre-order your copy of Kings of Their Court. So what kind of direction do you want to take this here, Tony? Like I said, you know, I think folks know by now, we really don't talk to each other about what we're going to talk about or the bullet points we're gonna go here. I've got about six or seven things here, and we got a little gimmick at the end of it, but I'll kind of let you lead off here talking about the importance of role players, Tony, and kind of some tips that start with one of your tips for coaches here when we're talking about the importance of it.
I think the very first thing that you have to do is you have to, as a coach, very, very clearly communicate what each player's role is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's something that's so very, very important. And then along those same lines with helping them to know and to understand the importance of it and to maybe garner an appreciation for it, you also have to get them to accept it. Because there are roles that, like I said, they're not the ones that get the glory. But at the same time, if you take a look at what makes a great team, it is these roles that are accepted and you know, embraced by players. And it's what separates the great teams from the good teams. And so that's the very first thing I would say, is you have to get the players to know their role. And the only way they're going to know it is if you very clearly communicate it and paint that picture for them so they understand what their role happens to be. And sometimes as a role player, it's kind of like being, you know, basically where you don't necessarily know what's going to be that night. Some night, you know, you have to be, you're going to not be guarded real close. You might have to score some. And then other times it might be, you have to make sure you get the ball to the players that are open on time and in position for them to be able to score. And so I think those are the things that are very, very important to be the Swiss Army knife, where you just kind of thrive in what your team needs that night. And you know, and you embrace that and you excel in it. And that, sometimes that's hard because it's not always clearly defined going in. You just have to kind of, you know, as the coach and you kind of figure out what's needed, kind of plug into that area.
I think that's really important, Tony, that one of the last things that you said there was sometimes you don't know exactly what that role, you know, hey, you know, Billy or Mary, I know you're going to help us. I know you're going to be important to us. I just can't quite right now, you know, 2 weeks before we play our first game, know exactly what that role is going to be. We're going to figure it out as we go along, but I really feel like you're going to be an integral part of what we're going to do this season. Have you ever been in that? I know I have been in that situation, Tony. Have you?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, sometimes going into the summer, you go into it, you kind of read, okay, I can see this, and you kind of see this. And other times it might be a little bit more fuzzy, but sometimes between, you know, when you wrap up the summer, end of July, till when you start your open gyms, you know, around this time in September or maybe early October, they've hit a growth spurt or maturity or whatever has happened. And now that role continues to expand. And then going in, depending upon opponent by opponent and what they do defensively, sometimes they're kind of like that chess piece that you get to move all kinds of different directions and you know, that causes havoc and helps your team be successful.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you brought it, and I brought it up, I don't know how many times on the pod. This was always my philosophy on roles: know, accept, embrace, fulfill, or excel. Your job as a coach is they got to know, and then it's up to them to accept it, embrace it, and excel at it. But at the same time, when you're telling them this is what you envision for their role, you got to sell it. I mean, you got to sell it. And sometimes, like I said, you know, if you're with a really good team and, you know, you have an overqualified third best player, you've got to get them to understand that, yeah, I know you could do more and there's going to be nights where we will need you to do more. But overall, big picture here, this is where you kind of fit this here, because we've got Billy and we've got Frankie. And sorry, Teddy, but you know, this is kind of where it's going to fit with you here. And those are tough conversations that to have, but those are sometimes the harder when you have the really, really good teams with a lot of depth, finding enough minutes, finding enough shots, finding those different things, that can be an uncomfortable challenge in a lot of different ways. It's a great problem to have, but at the same time, it can be a problem, right, Tony?
Well, most definitely. I mean, I would go back to, you know, we were talking a little bit about the NBA before we started. You know, could you imagine, you know, in the NBA where with the Celtics, I mean, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, you know, they're stars. And then Porzingis is also a star, but Porzingis in the finals wasn't always available. So if you're Al Horford, you know, am I starting tonight? Am I coming off the bench? And if you're, you know, Jrue Holiday or Derek White, you know, what's our role going to be if Porzingis doesn't play tonight. And
Yeah.
so it kind of fluctuates depending upon, you know, health of teammates and how they're performing and different things like that. And then, you know, with Porzingis, they brought him in off the bench, you know, early on there when he was able to play a little bit. And so, yeah, I mean, it's hard sometimes being a role player because it's not always clearly defined. And so some nights, you kind of play it by ear, and those are the things that, you know, can be frustrating. But at the same time, you know, it's one of those things, if you always stay ready, you don't have to get ready.
Mm-hmm. I think that another thing that is really, really important when you're talking about roles, when you're talking about your lineups, you only have one ball. You only have one ball, and only one guy or gal can have it at a time. And so sometimes you need to balance them. And again, this kind of goes to the selling thing. Yeah, Frank, you might be our fifth best player. And you know, but we're going to bring you off the bench as the sixth man, because we're going to have Billy start. But when you come in, it's going to make more sense and it's going to flow better. And again, that's part of that selling thing. You know, one of the really difficult decisions I had to make. I got a couple of stories from my coaching career that I wanted to convey tonight. My first year, way back when I was out in Gothenburg, Nebraska, out by North Platte, and we had about 5 regular season games left to go, and the team was kind of starting to hit their stride. We were kind of coming together. I was the new coach. They were figuring me out. I was figuring them out. We kind of started to figure some things out as a group, and our starting four broke her finger.
Sure.
And she was probably our third best player-ish, somewhere second, third, fourth, I don't know. It's like, gosh, what do we do? And we had a choice between two kids, and what I decided to do is, the way I saw it is, our center and our shooting guard were our two best offensive players. We had two kids at the three spot that could guard the heck out of the perimeter. We had a really good ball handling point guard. We needed somebody that was just going to be physical and play defense, because I felt like we had enough offense between the point guard and the two and the five, and we had the scrappy wing defender. So we needed one more defender, and this is kind of back in the time where, you know, it was a little bit more popular to play two bigs. I'm not dating myself here too much, but we took the we bypassed the sub coming off the bench, and I took my JV starting four and started her in the varsity games. And people thought I was crazy, but I just had a hunch. I just felt like that was better for our chemistry and to bring the better scorer off the bench when we needed that scoring punch. And we ended up winning our last 7 games in a row before we lost in the district final by 2 to go to the state tournament. It was something that worked out. Because, you know, we only had one ball and we needed the majority of our shots to go to those three kids. And it just, the balance of shots would have been that distribution of shots and offensive talent. It made more sense bringing the better offensive player off the bench than starting her in that game. And that's always been a lesson for me as I've thought about lineups and how I construct teams as I went through my coaching career.
You know, that's one thing, you know, that's interesting too, is, you know, I go back to growing up loving basketball and Vinnie Johnson for the Pistons, the microwave.
Yep.
You know, and that's something that I'll always remember and won't forget. And some of my better team situation where you bring in somebody off the bench that can provide that spark for you. And it's such an advantage, you know, and I go back to the Warriors, you know, mm-hmm. with the Hampton 5 lineup, where they would basically play Draymond at the 5 and kind of go small ball. They knew they couldn't do it for the entire game, but, you know, for stretches in the fourth quarter, if not the entire fourth quarter, they would go with that small ball lineup.
Yeah.
And, you know, I experimented with both those things, with, you know, having a kid coming off the bench. Hey man, you're a gunner. When you come in, you have the green light to shoot this thing.
Yeah.
And then I've also done where, you know, towards the end of the game, 5 minutes, 6 minutes, somewhere in that neighborhood, you know, it's a tight game, putting our best 5 players on the floor, regardless of size, and kind of going with a Hampton 5, if you will.
Yep.
And have had success doing both. And so I think basketball's one of those things, it's a game where you can be successful at it in a lot of different ways. I know you mentioned earlier the two bigs. You know, I'll be interested to see at some point in time in the future if the two big things ever come back in vogue again, or people are like, why did we ever do that? You know, plan one or plan five out just opens up the floor so much better. But who knows? Who knows? I'm sure, you know, football sees kind of the same thing where they were throwing it all over the field. Now it's like, hey, I think maybe we could run it because they have all these smaller guys in there now.
Exactly. Exactly. So what else you got, buddy?
You know, I go back to something you said, Marty, that I think is very important. You know, we talked about knowing your role and the coach's responsibility to communicate that to their players and for the players to kind of buy into it. And we kind of got into the ambiguity of it, you know, as far as not always knowing what exactly it's going to be. But I think the other thing that you kind of touched on that I want to go back to is almost like a used car salesman. You've got to convince them to accept it. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the big, big part of it is them accepting it, you know, because there's begrudgingly accepting it where you kind of drag your feet, your heart's really not into it. That's not accepting it. That's tolerating it. And if you're going to convince them, you've got to convince them to embrace it and to star in it. Yeah. Because I go back to kind of like what we were talking about earlier. Star players, don't get me wrong, it's not like they're a dime a dozen. It's like, oh, it's easy to be a star. But star players are going to be there. You know, every bad team has a leading scorer, if you will.
Yep.
All right. Where the great separates is when the role players buy into it and they embrace it with their whole heart. I go back, you know, we talk about copycat things and a copycat league, and the NBA is that way. You know, Derek White and Drew Holiday, to me, I don't know of better examples in the NBA today of guys who have embraced their role. Could they score more? Most definitely. But those two guys defend, they provide energy, and they also are really good passers that get their stars the ball, that get the Tatums and the Jaylen Browns the ball in the right position, the right situation, and they are willing to do whatever. And if you go back and take a look, you know, at the Olympic team, Derek White was huge for them because of the willingness to do that.
Yeah. You know, I think probably another one of my best selling jobs, and this, you know, this is going to be a twofold thing. You know, we had a year, it was a group of kids. We just struggled with chemistry with this group. We just couldn't get things figured out over the span of the 3 or 4 years that we had this group together. But one of the things that we did get figured out their senior year was had a wing player. It kind of came in as a gifted offensive player, but then as her career developed, she just didn't score it as much as we thought she would. And about five, I started looking at our schedule about five games into the season, and I said, and I won't say her name, but hey, we need somebody that's going to guard the other team's best player on the perimeter every night out. Just lock down, like, the first thing I look at, okay, who's their best offensive player on the perimeter? We're going to put you on her. Yeah, and I really think this is something that I think you can really buy into and be really successful with. What do you think? And to give this gal credit, she was like, absolutely, I'm in. Let me do it. And she did a great job the rest of that year. And I think one of the keys to a basketball team, you see highly successful teams that if you've got a great perimeter player, knowing the importance of their role, and you bring it up, Derek White, a lockdown perimeter player, really sets up your whole rest of your defense because they are cutting off the head of the monster. And so kind of a, just like, you know, combining the two things that you were talking about there, Tony, selling it. And then I think also a key thing with importance of roles is finding that great lockdown perimeter player. Who you're going to establish to be that great lockdown perimeter player, and will they accept, embrace, and then excel at that role? That was another big thing for me.
Yeah, and you bring up the point. That role is not glamorous. Nope. You know, if you go through and take a look at those great defenders that are out there, they're so very, very valuable. You know, you love for your great defender to get the nickname off night, because anytime they go against the other team's star player, that star player has an off night where they shoot 10, 15 percentage points lower than what they normally do. They score 5 to 8 less points than normally what they, you know, what they normally do and things like that. And so that's such a big role, because if you can take the other team's star player and make their night miserable and cause them some frustrations and stuff like that, that really, like you said, you cut off the head of the snake and the body's going to follow. And so I just think that's one, again, you know, you don't hear about it a lot, but I go back to some of my good teams that I had back when I was in Hudson, Iowa. One of the best defenders I ever coached, Danielle Dunwald, was her name. And she was the off night for a lot of star players that we ran across. We would put her on them and they would score a lot less, get a lot less touches, and just have a very, very frustrating night.
Yep. I've got two more things, Tony, and they're kind of interrelated. What do you got?
I've got one as well, and it's kind of what we've really been talking about. You know, you're talking about excelling in the role. You know, the phrase that looking at here is starring in your role. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's one of those things where, going back to what we were talking about earlier, you're like a Swiss Army knife. You have so many different functions in terms of what you do. It could be setting screens. It could be being that physical presence to make sure that your star player is not getting beat up. You know, the other night with Caitlin Clark, you know, just set some screens, get Carrington, or if Dawana Bonner was the one, I think, that was causing her the most frustration, yeah, but set some physical screens and get her open, you know, whether it's a ball screen or whether it's a pin down or whatever it may be. And then, you know, defensively block out every time, but taking those little things that we've talked about, those intangibles, those things, like we said, that, you know, if you really want to win, there's no such thing as a little thing, and getting them to star and excel in that role. It might be they reverse the basketball. You know, it might be defensively, they're the quarterback of the defense. They're barking out what's going on and how to execute against this, that, and the other thing. And so it's just making sure that they really star in that role. And, you know, it's so very, very invaluable.
Yeah. I'm going to take it way to the other end, literally, Tony, to kind of bring us home here before we get to our little gimmick for today. Let's talk about the end of the bench and their role. You know, your players, you know, logically, you know, you're going to play at the most probably 8, maybe 9 kids significant minutes in a varsity game, especially at the high school level where you only go 32 minutes, right? So, mm-hmm. But most teams, you're expected to suit up 12, 14, depending on your state, maybe even a 15th kid. So when you have players at the end of the bench, can they handle that? And especially if they are a senior that is not going to play. I think those are tough conversations that you need to have. And again, it goes back to what we've been hitting on the entire time: know, accept, embrace, and excel at your role. Hey, you know, Susie, I know you're a senior. You probably want to play, but here's the deal. I see you at number 11, and we're probably only going to play 8 kids. Now, if this is going to be a problem, if this is going to be an issue, if you don't think you can know, accept, embrace, and excel at being one of our greatest cheerleaders at the end of the bench, being really into it, being a great scout team player, understanding that, you know, it might be just time for us to part ways here the second week of November, the second week of practice, rather than you being a grumpy player and causing issues for the next 3.5 months or so. And so when you're talking about roles, we look at the stars, we look at the starters, we look at kids off the bench, but I also think it's really, really important that you consider the roles of the kids that are going to be, you know, 9 through 12, 13, 14, that are going to fill out your varsity roster, and are they going to be positive additions to everything that you're doing? And coaches, as you're putting together your rosters when the season gets going here in a month or two, it's big. Trust me, it's really, really big, because that's maybe the hardest role to accept of all is, I'm not going to play. I know I'm not going to play, but I'm still going to be all in. It takes special kids to do that.
Yeah, in today's world, very much so. It's that instant gratification, and, you know, and they want to be in the spotlight, the limelight, if you will, and getting them to be a part of that bench mob, you know, when they come to the bench after the other team's calling a timeout because you went on a run, high-fiving the hype person, if you will, when you've called a timeout because things aren't going well, to be that voice. Hey, we're okay here. We're all right. Here's what's, you know, just continue to be that cheerleader. And then, you know, when they get those minutes at the end of a game, you know, if they've earned the respect of their teammates will do for them what they've been doing, where they will cheer them on.
Yep.
And then, like you mentioned, scout team stuff, you know, being a part of that scout team, doing it the best that they can, trying to, you know, get under the head coach's skin because the scout teams may be doing too good of a job against the starters type thing. But yeah, that's a very, very valuable role. And like you mentioned, Marty, if you don't buy into that thing and you're going to be negative and stuff, it might be time to show different direction. And those kids that do know it, embrace it, and excel in it, those are rare. Those are kids that really are invaluable to your team culture.
Yep. So Tony and I have a little gimmick here. I thought it'd be kind of fun to do for a couple of minutes here tonight. Our top five NBA role players. You know, who are the guy who, and I kind of saw this, Tony, I don't know how you exactly defined it, and I probably explained it to you as clear as mud, but just glue players that you would want on your, these are not going to be star players. These are not going to be MVP candidates. These are not going to be necessarily probably all NBA type of players, but man, these, if this guy is your third best player, you are really cooking with gasoline, if you know what I mean. And so I have my starting five, and I kind of did mine a little bit as it turned out. It, you know, I had a little bit of a, basically a starting five type of construction here as it fell. And then I do have one honorable mention that I wanted to share as well. So, and a couple of my guys, you might think, boy, that's a really high profile role player. But if you think about it, I hopefully I'll be able to make it sense, have it make sense. So you want to go first? You want me to?
I'll take the first one if you want. Okay. And again, you're saying third best player, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, yeah. Yeah.
And I've already kind of alluded to him earlier. So I'm just going to go back and mention Derek White because I think he is. If you had the poster child, if you will, for what I kind of feel this is about, he would be my guy.
I have Derek White's backcourt mate, Drew Holiday. So I think we're right in line with thinking there. He would be my guy. I love watching Drew Holiday play. Perfect fit for the Celtics this past season. Perfect fit with the Bucks a few years ago. So my other backcourt player, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, KCP, defends like crazy, shoots it well, athlete, great locker room guy, does the dirty work, glue guy, KCP, love watching him play.
Yeah, probably the ultimate 3-and-D guy, if you will.
Yep.
The next guy I'm going to go with is off the New York Knickerbockers, and that would be Josh Hart.
Okay. Yep. I like it. My next guy, I like the Josh Hart pick. I'm going to go with Desmond Bane from the Memphis Grizzlies. You know, good shooter, good defender, good teammate. Again, just kind of that glue guy.
Okay. My next guy, and I may be kind of fast-forwarding him a little bit, but I think he showed a lot of this stuff as a rookie, Jaime Jaquez Jr. of the Miami Heat.
Nice. Yes. He was a high on my draft list that year of everybody's going to pass up on him and then the Heat are going to pick him or somebody's going to pick him and they're going to, you know, there's going to be a bunch of busts in front of him. And what do you know, Tony? I was right. So this guy, I personally don't like him as a player. I think he's a dirty player. I think he's, you know, so be it. You know, all of those negative things, but I recognize greatness. I recognize that he is a great player. I recognize that he is an outstanding glue player, and that would be Draymond Green, who does so many little things, has done so many little things for the Warriors over the year. He, you know, he is the key to Steph's game and does so many big things in that regard. So Draymond would be on my list.
Another guy that I kind of really grew to appreciate his game last year during their running the NBA playoffs. Ant gets a lot of pub for the T-Wolves, and understandably so. Karl-Anthony Towns, former number one pick, but the guy I really think is a key to this team and has a huge upside is Jaden McDaniels of the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yep. Really, really good defender. My center, Tony, might be a little overqualified, but I think, again, I think he would be better as the third best player rather than the second best player on a team, and that would be Bam Adebayo. And I know that might sound like he's a little overqualified, but I honestly think that his game is more fit to be the third guy. Like, if he were Draymond and there were two guys ahead of him, instead of just Jimmy being the only guy, quote-unquote, ahead of him on the Heat, I think the Heat would be, you know, title contenders, you know, legit title contenders. But I think Bam is that perfect third guy. I think he's outstanding. I love the way he plays. He had a great Olympics. I really admire the way he plays the game. So that was my guy.
Okay. Another guy, and I, you know, you mentioned with Draymond, you're not a big fan. I'm also not a big fan of this guy, probably known for tripping more players than what he should be known for, and that is Grayson Allen of the Phoenix Suns.
Yep. Had a great season shooting it last year, made himself some money. So my honorable mention guy, and again, this might be a little bit overqualified, and he's had a heck of a career, but if you really think about it, he fit the perfect role within the team, never complained about stuff. He just went out and did his thing, and that was Klay Thompson. Great shooter, great defender, knew what he wasn't. He wasn't a ball handler. He wasn't going to create a bunch of stuff off the bounce. He knew he wasn't as popular as Steph. He knew he wasn't as loud as Draymond. He just did his thing. And so he kind of gives me, or he's my honor. He's my sixth man, if you will, here. So.
A guy that I went with, a little long in the tooth and definitely on the end of his career, but back in the day when the Bucks were fighting for championships, and maybe they'll be able to find the fountain of youth. But this guy, Splash Mountain, Brook Lopez.
Yep. Outstanding player. I had a few other guys that I listed but didn't make my cut. Mikal Bridges, TJ McConnell, Clint Capella, Jalen Suggs, I still have my stock in him. Aaron Gordon of the Nuggets, Lou Dort of Oklahoma City, and I think a guy I think has got a chance to be really, really good, Trey Murphy from New Orleans. He would be another one I would throw in there too. So,
okay.
Coaches are absolutely loving our taking over a new program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Well, Tony, you know who is always, always been, they're not just a star in a role. They are stars.
Europe. I didn't know if we're going back to Matt Foley, but I'm going to go with Europe this one.
What will it be? What will it be? What will it be? I kind of kept you guessing there on that one, didn't I?
So, you did.
Yeah. No, we'll go back to Europe. We'll go with what we know. We know who we are, Tony, and that is our role. It is time for the coaching staff trivia. Tony, Asia Wilson won her third MVP the other night. I'm going to get straight to it. Only three other players in WNBA history have won the MVP three times. Who are they?
I'm going to go Cynthia Cooper.
That is incorrect.
Like I said, Coop didn't win three.
Cynthia
Cooper.
Lisa Leslie is one.
Okay.
Cynthia Cooper's teammate.
Candace. Oh. Tina Thompson?
Nope.
We had Coop, we had Tina Thompson, and we had... Ah, this is going to drive me nuts.
National
I was
champion.
Going Candace Parker.
Not Candace Parker. The other one is a post player. One's a wing, one's a post player. You're going to kick yourself in the tuchus when you hear it.
I am drawing a blank on this one. It's not Cheryl Swoops, is it?
It's Cheryl Swoops. And you got one guess left. Post player, three-time MVP.
Were there two besides?
Lisa Leslie, Cheryl Swoops.
Yeah, Lisa Leslie, Cheryl Swoops.
And one more, post player. Home, she is home. Her home country would give you a little Lloyd Christmas. Well, good day, mate. Let's put another shrimp on the bar.
Lauren Jackson.
Lauren Jackson. There it is. From the land down under. Yes, to quote Men at Work. So,
huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you got there. You got there. You got there, you know, and, you know, after working that hard at it, I highly suggest you do this.
Want to eat? Always, we have the meat.
Tony, do you know who is buying Arby's for us this week?
Not Kurt Miller.
No, no. Although I'm sure he got a compensation package.
Yeah, I think I had a pretty good bite out there. Oh, no, I do not know who's got Arby's for us.
The one, the only gold medal winning Joel Embiid.
Oh, I did see 3 year, 190 some million.
Yeah, 192. So about 60, I guess, history teacher math, carry about 64 million a year, Tony, on average.
You might be able to buy a franchise.
Yeah. An Arby's franchise, I assume.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. I decided you could probably even keep the shake machine running with that kind of.
Yeah, this ain't McDonald's. Yeah. This is Arby's.
This is Arby's, damn it. This is what we're going to do.
We got standards.
That's right. Oh, speaking of standards.
How about that?
Let's jump into this week in basketball, Tony. As you mentioned, just breaking late here, right before we came on, Kurt Miller let go by the LA Sparks, had a great run with the Connecticut Sun, hired by the Sparks, and 2 years, took a big step backwards this year, wins and losses wise. Now they face a lot of injuries again. You know, Cameron Brink kind of being the headliner of that. Fair, not fair? What do you think, Tony?
I thought they'd give him at least one more year, just from the standpoint of they're going to most likely, again, it's a lottery, but most likely they're going to get the number one pick in the WNBA draft. You plug in Paige Beckers with Hamby and Brink and just lost the girl's name from Rekia Jackson.
Rekia Jackson, number four pick, yeah.
Yes, they have some pieces, and I but maybe they have a coach in mind. I don't know, but I think you could do a lot worse than Kurt Miller. But it'll be interesting to see where he falls. I know Derek Hamby had, you know, shocked by it and you know, frustrated because she had a great relationship with him, put up really good stats this year. Yeah. But I just thought, I don't know, maybe another year, but. What do I know? I don't run a franchise.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't see it either. I don't understand again, you know, especially with the injuries that they dealt with. They knew they weren't going to be very good anyway. They had the Wood Brink. Was she the second or third overall pick?
She was second.
Second. Yeah. So, I mean, if you're picking second, you're not going to make a big jump and then you lose that second overall pick. I personally don't see the logic. He's a proven winner. He did great things at Connecticut, you know, give him the pieces to work with. And, you know, like I said, yeah, you know, Indiana needs, you know, or they're like Indiana where they need that one more pick and to kind of set the table for everybody. And so I'm surprised at it as well. I am not surprised that Kawhi Leonard, it sounds like, will be out of drills for the Clippers. Are we ever going to see Kawhi at the apex that he was at with Toronto, with San Antonio, and a couple of times here with the Clippers in short little bursts?
I hate to say it, but I don't think so. I mean, Father Time's undefeated, and I think that Father Time has caught up with Kawhi as we've seen a rash of injuries. I mean, you could go all the way back to the Spur days when he had some issues and then, you know, was able to play and have a good season in Toronto, which landed him a really nice contract with the Clippers as he goes back home. But if there's one thing that's been consistent with his tenure in Los Angeles with the Clippers, it's being unavailable.
Yeah. And the most important ability, availability.
It's availability.
Yeah. Yeah.
So remember Coach Finley saying that.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. We heard that once or twice back in the day. So yeah, I agree. I think the Clippers are unfortunately kind of headed in the wrong direction. Kawhi in and out. And again, he's unbelievable. When he's right, he's still awesome. But you know, it's just hard to trust those joint injuries, especially when they're repetitive joint injuries like that. Those lower body injuries. I mean, him and, you know, Embiid as well. You know, and they lose Paul George. He's in and out. Harden is not the James Harden of 5 years ago. You know, and we'll get to the Clippers whenever we get to the Pacific Division. But yeah, things are not looking very good for them right now moving into their new building. So, Tony, thoughts on the W playoffs so far? We've had, again, we're taping this on Tuesday night. So New York just closed out Atlanta. Las Vegas and Seattle are in a tussle. Las Vegas jumped out big early. Kelsey Plum just basically said, you know, I'm not going to miss a shot for about 10 minutes here. It's a 5-point game towards the end of the third quarter as we speak, Tony. So, yeah, I mean, what are you seeing so far? How do you like the matchups? We're you know, we had a little Carter Plum guest appearance over the weekend here, giving us 20 minutes of W expertise. What are your thoughts so far?
It's kind of going the way that I think it's been forecasted. You know, I think that if you go through, New York was favored to sweep Atlanta. You know, but I do give Atlanta credit. Atlanta gave them a pretty good run tonight, especially. Yeah. And then you got to give Seattle credit. You get punched in the face like that, they're pretty much doubled up, down double figures, and they fought their way. Like you mentioned, I think they're down three as we get to the five now, as you get to the tail end of the third quarter here. But Seattle will make Las Vegas earn it. But I think with Las Vegas being at home and having the MVP, they're probably going to get through. But that's been probably the most competitive series out of all of them. Mm-hmm. I'll be interested to see how Indiana responds tomorrow, because Connecticut punched them and beat them down, you know, in that first game. Are they going to be able to win? Because if you go through the WNBA expert predictions, the only first round series that was expected to go three is the Indiana-Connecticut one. Every other one was predicted to be a sweep. So it's kind of gone as expected with chalk.
Yeah.
I think things get really interesting as we get to that next round. If Las Vegas is fortunate enough to hold on and to advance, they would see New York, and that would be a really, really good series.
Well, if it does go chalk, you've got Minnesota and Connecticut who were neck and neck all season long for that, you know, that second spot behind New York. And then you've got the rivalry between New York and Las Vegas. Could this be the best ever WNBA semifinal setup that maybe the league has ever had?
I would say yes.
Yeah.
Because any of those four teams are talented enough to win it. Now, if you made me pick one, I'd probably go New York. But at the same time, Minnesota has played really, really well and probably has played better than New York the last 10 to 13 games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you had been saying all summer, Tony, Las Vegas just seems like they're kind of waiting, and Now they're starting to hit their strides a little bit. Chelsea Gray is healthy. Asia Wilson's Asia Wilson. Plum start, you know, they're, I hesitate to call you Nostradamus, Tony, but I think you might have got this one correct.
It just reminded me, you know, if you go back, speaking of old school stuff with like the Houston Rockets and Rudy T, never underestimate the heart of a champion. And Becky Hammond seems to kind of be good at this coaching thing.
Yeah.
And I felt like she was maybe sacrificing a few games. They're going to lose the battle at that point, but they're playing to win the war. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they're coming into it. But at the same time, Seattle's a little bit shorthanded. I'm not sure if their starting center was back tonight. I know that she did not play in game one.
I don't think she was. So I haven't had much of a chance to see it, but I'm just kind of checking back and forth. So coaches, by now you have seen the newest thing coming out of a pen and a napkin, the opening tip. Substack newsletter. I put an edition out there for free, and hopefully you see what a great investment this is going to be for you as a coach. I'm guessing it probably is, if you watch everything and listen to everything, it's going to take you almost 3 hours to get through everything on the opening tip newsletter here. What do we have in there? You've got an original article by myself here. Just thoughts, ideas on different coaching topics. Into the Lab. That's probably my favorite thing. Is the Into the Lab. It's me, another coach, and a whiteboard, and we're just drawing stuff up here. Stuff to help you out, to help you become better, and to help your team become better this coming season and beyond. Got another exclusive podcast. You heard the first one, Industriousness from the Wooden Pyramid of Success, and it's me and it's two semi-retired former girls basketball coaches, Matt Kern of York, Nebraska, Nate Wall of David City Aquinas here in Nebraska, and every newsletter, we're going to break down an aspect of Wooden's Pyramid of Success. Bookshelf recommendations from off the bookshelf, X's and O's stuff. I'm dropping in a university video. It's just going to be given to you there. You know, and I really believe in the products that I've put together. It's practical stuff that's going to help make you a better coach. And then we've got the Coach's Corner with links to clips and articles. As you saw, we had our two Olympic coaches, Steve Kerr and Cheryl Reeve. Just really, really good stuff here. And I know it's subscription-based, but goodness gracious sakes alive, as Coach Wooden would say, it is so affordable. $8 a month for two newsletters. That's $4 every newsletter. That's $2 every single week. Or you can get a year-long subscription, $75. That's 24 editions of the newsletter. That's basically $3 a newsletter. That's basically a dollar an hour if it takes you about 3 hours to get through everything that you're getting here. It could not be more affordable. It could not be more positive for you. It's going to help make you a better coach. So subscribe to the Opening Tip newsletter. Folks, you're not going to regret it. All right, Tony. Let's jump into NBA time, prediction time here. The NBA Southeast, and I just kind of have one word for this division, and that word is...
garbage.
Jeez. Oh, boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's this is a tough one here. This is a tough one, but we're going to do our due diligence here. We're going to do our due diligence. We are going to pick. We are going to have our predictions here. Tony, I went first last week. Who do you have in the cellar of the Southeast Division?
I'm going to go out on a limb here and go with the Washington Wizards.
Yeah, they're not good.
No, I'm not sure if they win the Big Ten or the ACC.
That might be a little bit of a stretch. They got Valanciunas, they got Malcolm Brogdon, they got some veterans. Kyle Kuzma, good stats, bad team guy.
Jordan Poole. You just said good stats, bad team. So that reminded me.
Well, they got a couple of them there. They are going to sag for flag, I would imagine. I would be very surprised, although, you know, Portland did not let go of Malcolm Brogdon last year. The Washington signed Valanciunas to a 3-year contract in the offseason. You know, Alex Saar, the number 2 overall pick, obviously struggled a bit
Like a trainer.
In the summer league. He had the 0-for-15 game in the summer league. But on ESPN.com they have their five starters listed as Brogdon, Poole, Kuzma, Sarr, and Valanciunas. Other than Sarr, I would not be surprised to see any of those gentlemen not with the Wizards by the trade deadline or shortly thereafter after the deadline. Jordan Poole needs to rebuild his stock around the league, but Kuzma brings some value. If he's your fourth or fifth best guy, that's a good deal. Malcolm Brogdon, steady point guard, Valanciunas, veteran big man. I think a lot of those guys are going to be out by that point, and then it's going to be, Kispert and the kid they drafted out of Pittsburgh, Bub Carrington, the Koulibaly guy that they got from France last year. This is complete rebuild, sag for flag time here.
Okay, I'm good with that. I agree with that.
Okay, in fourth, Tony, this might be a little bit of a surprise to you. I had the Atlanta Hawks.
That is a surprise. You want me to point out that the Charlotte Hornets are in that division too?
I do, but I just can't do the Trae Young thing. I think he's. I mean, obviously, let me be clear. Trae Young is way better at basketball than I am. I totally understand that. But
what about Pau Gasol?
I just can't get into Trae Young's game. He had that one run, and Clint Capella's getting older. I think I could see him being traded. Richesse, number one pick, starting at the small forward here. Bogdanovich is a nice NBA guy, but I just don't see the I think Quinn Snyder's a good coach, but I just don't see how the pieces are going to fit here. And I just have a little bit more. And again, I'll say with Charlotte being in third, LaMelo Ball, I think we forget when he's healthy how good he potentially could be. And at some point,
something earlier about good stats, bad teammate?
I did, but that would qualify for, in my mind, it qualified. At least LaMelo Ball is 6'7". Trae Young is 5'11", and I don't know. I just don't see it. I've been disappointed in the Hawks since they had that run, and they've never come even anywhere close to that, and I just don't see it happening anytime soon. That's me. What do you think, buddy?
I'm going Hornets. I just have never been impressed with LaMelo Ball's motor. He just doesn't play hard. And then, like you mentioned, and I wasn't, obviously trying to be a little bit funny, but good stats, bad teammate. I think he is the poster child for that. And then as I look at the rest of their roster, underwhelming would be how I would describe it. I mean, Miles Bridges, another guy, good stats, bad teammate.
Yeah.
And then, Marty, I look at it, and I'm not trying to be funny. I don't really see many other NBA caliber players. Brandon Miller has potential, yeah, but you have two, I would say, not great models around him. With Ball and Bridges.
I don't disagree with you in that regard, Tony. I get it.
Grant Williams is not great. Yeah. I mean, Dallas kind of showed him the door quickly.
We got three
Who's
teams here.
Coach?
The Charles Lee, he was the assistant with the Celtics. They got
a competent head coach then.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing I would ask, and I should ask this earlier back when we were on the topic of the Hawks, where in the heck did Murray go?
It's to New Orleans.
Ooh,
yeah, they traded.
That's going to help me raise up New Orleans status.
Yeah.
I would have, in all honesty, if I was Atlanta, I would have kept Murray and traded Trae Young.
Yeah, I think from the NBA podcast that I listened to, I think that's what they wanted to do, but they couldn't find anybody that would take Trae Young.
I thought I had heard a little bit of rumblings, and maybe it was just rumblings that the Lakers were kind of interested in Trae.
Well, I think GM LeBron James might have been a little interested in Trae, but
he doesn't have a great track
record. He doesn't have a great track record either. So, did you have Atlanta third then, Tony?
Yeah. I would call it there's not a whole lot of difference between Atlanta and Charlotte, to be honest with you. But yeah, I would go Atlanta three.
Okay. Who'd you have two then?
I really, really, really wanted to pull the trigger and bump this team to one, but I couldn't. Orlando Magic, I had in two.
This is like the most we have disagreed. I have faith in the Orlando Magic. I think they're going to grow together. I've got them winning the division. I've got Miami in two. Jimmy Butler. Now, Jimmy Butler could come in and he could be like, okay, Pat Riley, you're not going to give me a contract. We know motivated Jimmy Butler is really, really good, but also Jimmy Butler has got a lot of miles on the pickup truck. And there's a reason why they haven't offered him that that contract. There's got to be a reason. The easy thing would be to lock him up for a couple more years. There's got to be something there as to why they haven't done it. And Riley came out and basically said, you don't play enough, so we're not going to give you the money. But, you know, I like the concept of Terry Rozier, Tyler Hero, Jimmy Butler, and Bam Adebayo. That's a really, really good four. But between the four of them, well, between the three perimeter guys, they've been hurt a lot. Rozier was hurt last year at the end of the year. Hero's been in and out of the lineup. Butler, we know about him. I talked about Bam, but then after that, you take a look at their bench, and they're relying on Khalil Ware, the skinny rookie from Indiana. Not a fan. You want to talk about a dude with no motor? I saw him get absolutely destroyed by Nebraska last year. Not once, not twice, but three times. Nebraska just destroyed Indiana, and you looked at that guy and you were like, he should be the best player on the floor, and he is just taking this beat down like he doesn't give a rootin' tootin' fart. And this is your backup center. They got, you know, again, we both love Jaime Jaquez, but then Alec Burks, Josh Richardson, you know, Duncan Robinson deep on the bench, you know, Kevin Love, who's 206. I think Orlando, with their depth, their athleticism, their defensive tenacity, now they need to score better. And you hope as Jalen Suggs grows, he scores it a little bit better. They signed KCP in the offseason to be a steady guy.
Like that. You know, Anthony Black's got some potential too.
Yeah, they got Cole Anthony.
But let me ask you one quick question.
All right.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Who's making an outside shot for him?
Chad Angel. It's got to be, yeah, that's the problem. You know, KCP needs to shoot it. Ben Caro, they need to shoot it better, without a doubt. But can they play with youth and defense and off of transition?
They're a together team. I love their chemistry.
Yeah.
I think Mo Wagner is a potential star, but the one knock on him is the same knock that, I'm sorry, not Mo Wagner, Franz Wagner. Anyway, the one knock on him is what we talked about earlier, can't shoot it real well. But if he shoots it well, I root for him. I'm not a big Heat guy. I love Riley, but yeah. I'm not a big Heat guy. But I hope Orlando knocks him off.
Yeah, and I just think over 82 games with youth, with athleticism, with defense, getting out and try. I think they led the league in steals last year. Mm-hmm. You know, they got the confidence of a
Jamal Mosley's underrated as a coach.
Yep. You know, they took Cleveland to seven in the first round of the playoffs, so they got a little taste of it. I'm not saying they're ready to don't clear off room for the Larry O'Brien trophy anytime soon, but I just think they're the best team in a bad division. I think if Milwaukee or New York or Philadelphia or Boston was in this division, they would win this division by double digit games, but they're not. And this is the hand that Orlando has dealt. So I just like them better than I like Miami, you know, but that's me.
Okay. I just like with Miami, it's been there, done that. And like you mentioned, I think a motivated Jimmy Butler, which I think he will be, and I think he'll show Riley, I'm going to play. Mm-hmm. I think Jaime Jaquez is ready to take another step. Nikola Jovic, I think is how you say it.
Yep. Had a nice Olympic.
I think he's won. Yes. And then the Larson kid that they got from Arizona, I like him as a guard. Mm-hmm. Nasir Little needs to kind of revamp his career. And so they're taking some flyers on some guys. Thomas Bryant, they got him on the cheap. He's been a productive NBA player. But yeah, I think Josh Christopher is another one that, you know, he would hate Highsmith. And if there's anybody that can get, you know, kind of guys off the cheap, off the scrap heap and have some success with them, it's Spo. Yeah. And, you know, if you were to name the top three NBA coaches. Spo's in that conversation, and he ain't three.
Yep. Yep. Oh, yeah. Heat culture, baby. And you know they're going to get the most out of everything that they got. I just don't know. Again, my look at it, I think if they were to play it out, I think Orlando would win the division by two or three games. I don't think they're going to blow them out. You know, I don't think they're going to win 55 games and Miami wins 45 or anything like that. I just like their depth, their athleticism, their defense, and I think that'll be enough to carry them for 82. But hey, we'll find out, won't we, Mr. Viss?
We will. Yeah. We will. But this is one, like you said, we probably didn't see eye to eye on the most, but it's not that different. I think the ones you went with, I want to happen, but I would go with maybe until they show me, with me being from Missouri, I'm not going to buy it quite yet.
Geography joke. I like it. So
that's what I'm here for.
Yes, yes. And you are here to wrap up this show, Tony, episode number 102. It is well past our bedtime. The importance of role players. Any final thoughts, buddy?
I go back to, if you're going to have a great team, role players are more important than star players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your star players, what'd they say? I heard something in the playoffs, the games on Sunday. Role players win you playoff games, star players win you series. But you need those role players to step up to win those games so your star players can step up and win the series for you. So, yeah. So, really, really good stuff, Tony. Episode number 102. Like we said, we're recording this late Tuesday night. Well, for us, it's late Tuesday night.
Youngsters are just getting started.
Yes, they are. So, so a lot of good stuff here this week. A lot of really good thoughts and ideas. We'll be back next week with something. By the time you hear next week, by the time you hear episode 103, guess what? You should have ordered Kings of Their Court. It should be on that Amazon. It should be the Amazon guy. You should be waiting by the door, waiting for the Amazon guy or gal to drop that off on your front doorstep or into your mailbox. Go check it out. $19.99 on Amazon.com. Again, I'm biased. I think it's a really, really good basketball story. You've got the seal of approval from Tony Davis, and so go check it out, folks. I'd really appreciate it. And again, I think it's going to be worth your while. If you're a basketball fan, I think you're going to really, really like this book. So,
kind of like Lay's potato chip, Marty. You can't eat just one. It's one of those things where you can't just read a chapter. It's 300 plus pages, almost 400. You'll read it in less than a week.
I challenged a friend. I told him that you read it in less than a week, and I told him you need to read it in 6 days. So the challenge has been set. I appreciate it, Tony. I appreciate the praise. Has Brandon Viss started on it yet?
He hasn't. Very disappointed in Brandon Viss for that.
Brandon Viss, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. I'm just disappointed. Yeah. So, but you know what? I'm not disappointed in. I'm not disappointed in this podcast. It was a great run here. Importance of role players. Hopefully, coaches, you got some things out of it. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.